If we claim to be the children of God, we have to become more willing to embrace our neighbors who confess other faiths while we talk sanely and thoughtfully about our differences. The truth is that self-serving, egocentric religion is morally no better than self-serving, egocentric behavior.
That's Dr. Kirby Godsey, and today he brings you a powerful message of faith and hope. I'm Peter Wallace. This is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thanks, Sherry. We're honored to have with us today the Reverend Dr. R. Kirby Godsey. For 27 years, Kirby served as president and CEO of Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, before being named chancellor there in 2006. He is the author of several books, including his latest, Is God a Christian? Kirby earned degrees from Samford University, New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, the University of Alabama, and Tulane University, where he earned a doctorate in philosophy. Kirby, welcome to Day One.
Thank you.
Your first book, entitled When We Talk About God, Let's Be Honest, which was published in 1996, was branded as heretical by the Georgia Baptist Convention. Why was it so provocative?
I think perhaps because I was so plain spoken in the book. I don't think the book contains really radical ideas. And while I was not surprised that people might disagree with something I had written, I was a little surprised at the debate and in some cases the hostile rhetoric that was expressed about the book. But it was intended to be a rather plain statement about where I have come in my own religious journey, trying to encourage other people to think about what they believe. And the other aspect of the book, which was intentional, is that I was seeking to write in non-theological language. I wasn't trying to write for theologians. I wanted to write to ordinary people who embody and claim the Christian faith to create conversations about what do they believe and what do we believe, and to try to talk about the doctrines of our faith not in high-flowing terms, but in ordinary language. And I think the plain-spoken dimension of the book some people found offensive, perhaps because they understood it.
Well, your latest book, Is God a Christian, is no less controversial. It's a thoughtful and revolutionary book that challenges readers to consider a loving God big enough for all of God's children. Do you think most Christians in North America today have a distorted picture of God?
Well, you know, I think we may at times underestimate the willingness of Christians to think more openly about other faiths. We need to provide more space and more help, really, for encouraging people to think and talk seriously about people who believe differently than we, because they've come from different traditions, and I think we can build a better world if we do not view people who have a different religious tradition as enemies. It's not our judgment to make about whether they are acceptable to God. Our responsibility is to bear witness to the light by which we live, and in doing so, to be willing for people to bear witness to the light by which they live. We can learn from one another, and I'm quite confident that that God has been known by genuine people of faith who have come to know God through different religious traditions. I think we can learn from one another, and in no way takes away from the fact that my own understanding of God has been brought to me through Jesus Christ. So I am personally a committed Christian, but as a committed Christian, I think my first obligation is to love a person, whether they're Christian or not, whether they ever become Christian or not, mm-hmm. and to treat those people with respect and with grace, because they are the children of God.
Your book includes chapters on the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Muhammad, the God of Jesus, the God of the Hindus and the Buddha, and so forth. As you study the religions of the world, what struck you the most? What differences or commonalities did you note?
It became clear to me that there are people of devout faith in all of these traditions, genuinely holy people mm-hmm. in all of these traditions, holy men and women whose understanding of God should be taken seriously. The other thing that struck me is that in the high points of all these great world religions, that moving away from our self-centered lives and embracing a life of compassion is what it means to follow God. Mm-hmm. So there are some commonalities that exist among all our faiths. And I would, I think we can learn about our own faith more deeply by looking at our faith in light of what others believe.
Well, your message today captures a good bit of the heart of your book. Your text is John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. Would you read it for us?
Yes. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Kirby, we look forward to hearing your message entitled Redeeming Our Religion. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Peter. Religion has been a source of great human good, a deep reservoir of hope and grace. But we should face up to the dark side as well. Religion is being used for profoundly evil purposes. Bad religion is making our world more dangerous. From Tehran to Norway to Gaza, people are maiming and killing and plotting evil deeds in the name of God and Allah and Yahweh. The killing fields of devout believers are ablaze. Furthermore, our efforts to preserve our humanity cannot be left solely to political power or military might. Developing smarter and more powerful and more lethal weapons will not be enough. We should learn that more efficiency in killing will not lead us toward more effectiveness in living. Our faiths, all of them from Confucius to Muhammad, from Abraham to Jesus, would teach us that it will ultimately take more than killing to stop the killing. It will take more than war to end wars. Yet contrary to those spiritual leaders we claim to follow, we are using religion to sponsor wars and to inspire killing. True believers are fanning the flames of hatred and anger. Our religions, especially Judaism and Christianity and Islam, have been hijacked by the myth of violence, believing that violence is our best road to the promised land. So our question is this: how can we redeem our religions from this path of evil, where our faiths are being used to ignite the fires of conflict? Two powerful forces are fueling hyper-religious partisanship and stymieing our efforts to take the first steps toward achieving interfaith understanding. Those forces are fear and ignorance. When religion is hijacked by fear, the result is some radical brand of religious fundamentalism which spews out absolutism and exclusivity and hostility toward people of other faiths. Fundamentalists are usually convinced that they alone possess God's truth, and they possess it absolutely. Virtually all of the world's major religions today have fallen victim to this self-serving, self-righteous, and uncompromising belief system. While it is less true of Chinese religions and Buddhists, Christianity and Judaism and Islam have emerged as the world's most angry religions. For us Christians, I believe that such anger and hostility is contrary to the spirit, to the character, and to the word embodied by Jesus. Christian fundamentalism, and Muslim fundamentalism in particular, are making it far more difficult to open compassionate conversations with other faiths. But all fundamentalism, whether it be Jewish or Christian or Muslim or Hindu, is woven from the same fabric. There is not a dime's worth of difference between Christian and Muslim or Jewish fundamentalism. It is born of the same religious instincts, and the consequences are all too often tragically evil. A religion of fear inevitably leads us toward a religion of violence. Throughout the world, people are drowning in fear. It is fear, not faith, that lies at the root of terrorism. It is fear, not faith, that acts with arrogance and bitterness toward other believers. It is fear, not faith, that proclaims doctrinal absolutes and moral certainty in our uncertain world. It is fear, not faith, that trusts violence and hatred more than compassion and grace. The other force which we must overcome, if we are to establish interfaith dialogue, is the crippling shackles of ignorance. It is ignorance, not faith, that teaches creationism as legitimate science. It is ignorance, not faith, that wants us to believe that the Bible is inerrant or infallible. It is ignorance, not faith, that claims that God is the exclusive possession of either Christians or Jews or Muslims. For those of us who claim to be Christian, we should also acknowledge that the practice of the Christian religion throughout the world often appears to have little in common with the mind and the spirit and the character of Jesus. I recall Mahatma Gandhi, who said, "I would have been a Christian had it not been for Christians." Jesus set out, I believe, to enable people to see the light of God that had been partially eclipsed by established religion, with all of its doctrines and systems and regulatory rhetoric. Jesus' faith was closer to the street, and on those streets he bumped into the learned, the blind, and the beggars. He crossed paths with the rich and powerful, with outcasts and adulterers. He socialized with young friends and a whole crowd of people who were willing to sit on a hillside to hear what he had to say. The fact is that Jesus was not very discriminating. He embraced tax collectors, Samaritans, and thieves. The word from God which Jesus taught and lived on the streets of Nazareth and Damascus and Jerusalem was this: we are called to relate as God relates to us, to forgive, to become makers of peace, to be instruments of grace. In short, to embrace a new way of living together in the world, including living with those who are committed to diverse religious traditions. As the centuries have gone by, we have constructed a giant religious corporation called the Christian religion, with all of its subcorps called the Roman Catholic Church, the Southern Baptist Convention, the Presbyterian Church USA, the United Methodist Church, to name a few. Each believes that it offers the best way to protect and to preserve the light from God. I believe Jesus would say to us that God's forgiveness is not conditioned on anybody's religion. Rather, Jesus simply introduced his disciples and us to a startling new way of being together in the world. It is a way that lifts people up instead of puts people down. It is a way that forgives instead of condemns. It is a way that sits alongside the dispirited and that loves with no expectation of being loved in return. It is a way that says boldly in the face of hatred that love will prevail over hatred. It is a way that says in the face of evil's injuries that goodness will prevail over evil. It is a way that says in the face of senseless killing that life will prevail over death. That light has pointed us toward a better way and has changed our center of gravity for understanding what on earth we are doing here. Each of the religions of mankind is, I believe, seeking to preserve the light of God's presence in the world. Yet our good intentions to preserve God's light through our religious institutions often become platforms for self-indulgent religious arrogance. The truth of our tradition does not depend upon the untruth of another. What unholy arrogance prompts us to say that the way, the truth, and the life has been communicated only to us? We simply have no place to stand to make a judgment on behalf of God on the authenticity of the light by which others live. Remarkably, some believers cannot seem to trust their own faith unless they can be sure that everybody else is wrong. The claim to possess absolute truth and to be the exclusive ones within God's embrace is saying far more than we know. It leads us toward unseemly prejudice and high-handed religious bigotry. If we want to build a more peaceable world, we will have to learn that earnest, committed believing does not require hateful and mean-spirited rhetoric. It is misguided, wrong-headed, treacherous to think that respecting another's confession of faith represents disloyalty to our own. It is religious narcissism at its worst. You and I are neither wise enough nor good enough to judge the faith of another. Most of us, not all, are Christians because we grew up in the Christian tradition. Most Muslims, not all, are Muslims because they grew up in the Muslim tradition. Most Jews are Jewish because they grew up in the Jewish tradition. Most Hindus are Hindus because they grew up in that tradition. So most of us, after all, are children of our religious traditions. If we claim to be the children of God, we have to become more willing to embrace our neighbors who confess other faiths while we talk sanely and thoughtfully about our differences. The truth is that self-serving, egocentric religion is morally no better than self-serving, egocentric behavior. All our religions, including our own, are broken vessels, perhaps born of light, but molded by human hands. These human vessels are chipped and scarred from centuries of abuse and misuse. We must take these broken and cracked and scarred vessels and mend them as best we can into instruments of peace and hope in our muddled world. We cannot afford for our religions simply to be used to inspire acts of destruction. We can embody a better way. I believe that we must begin to reach out in friendship and compassion to earnest believers of other faiths. That surely does not mean that we should be silent when people use their religious faith to justify vengeance and meanness. Holy meanness is still meanness. Muslims must speak out against the perversion of Islam by the jihadists. Christians must speak out against the atrocities committed by individuals who claim to be the Christian army of God. Jews must speak out against those who understand the promise of God to be simply about the possession of land rather than living as the people of God. Our religions have to be reimagined and reclaimed. It is our obligation, I believe, to save our religions from these tragic episodes of partisan abuse. Hans Kern was right. There will be no peace in the world until there is peace among religions. Surely we understand that our religions cannot resolve every human conflict. We cannot eliminate every dark episode of human injustice, but we can do this. You and I can become a vigilant voice for a better way. We in good faith, as people of faith from across the world, can reach out to become a voice for peace instead of war. We can stop conferring holiness on our violent episodes of revenge. We can begin to replace incendiary rhetoric with reason and respect. Our religious gatherings can become forums for achieving hope and understanding, instead of being used as preachments for conflict and alienation. In the end, all of us should be buoyed by this realization. Our ultimate hope rests solely in God. Our hope rests in God's grace and God's presence with us, not in our frail and flawed religious institutions, shaped by human hands that sometimes run aground. To my fellow Christians and to my Muslim and Jewish friends, and to those who look at us Christians with a wary eye, I wish to say that I believe that our hope will not rest in some presumed fact that we believe in the right God. If there is hope for humankind, if there is hope for each of us, any hope at all, it lies in the prospect that the God who stands above all our small claims to have corralled the truth, that the God who stands above all our trivial claims to have captured God in our fragmented religious systems, if there is any hope at all, it lies in this: that the God who is not a Christian, that the God who is not a Jew, that the God who is not a Muslim, believes in us and lifts us up above our partisan divides, that the God above all our little gods loves and embraces us without condition. I believe God yearns to set us free. Free from our warring ways. God yearns to set us free. Free from our haughty condescension toward other believers. Free from our addiction to violence. So that one day as a new dawn breaks, we can embrace one another as children of God.
Now, Dr. Kirby Godsey offers some final reflections on today's message with our host, Peter Wallace.
Kirby, religion has been a source of great human good, you said, a deep reservoir of hope and grace. We don't often hear that these days, as it seems religion is under attack on all sides. What should we keep in mind about the positives of religious faith?
Religion really has been a source of great human good, and I believe that we cannot solve the great problems we face in the world unless we take our faith seriously and begin to live out our faith. Because I think as people of faith, as a Christian faith, and I believe it's the case of others, if we take our faith seriously, we begin to behave differently toward other peoples of the world.
But as you pointed out, religion has a dark side as well, and you posed a question: how can we redeem our religions from the path of evil where our faiths are being used to ignite the fires of conflict? How can we hold on to our own particular religious beliefs without denigrating someone else's?
We need to begin to listen to one another. Mm. It does not deny our faith to listen to what someone else affirms. And there's a lot about which to listen. Look, all of our religions are built around stories. Listening to someone else talk about their stories of their faith as we tell them the story of our own. Because becoming a Christian, for example, is really about entering into the Christian story, becoming a part of that story. And that's the case with others, and we need to tell one another our stories, the journeys we've made. We need to become more aware of the literature that other people hold sacred and the kind of sacred places they hold to be sacred. And as we begin to listen to one another, understand one another more fully, I think we can begin to break down the barriers that hold us apart. we should always remember that affirming our own faith and being fully committed to our faith does not mean that we should not be willing to listen to the faith of others. And indeed, I believe we will draw more people to our faith by living out our faith, by loving others, by listening to others, than we will by acting with hostility or rage or condescension toward people who confess other faiths.
Dr. Godsey, what's the one thing you hope our listeners will keep in mind in the week ahead from your sermon?
I hope that we will become more open to meeting our friends who may believe differently than we, meeting them in the Spirit of Christ. And that means to love them, whether they're Christian or not, whether they ever become Christian or not, to love them and embrace them and to treat them ultimately as the children of God.
Dr. Kirby Godsey, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever. Now you can watch Day One videos right on your smartphone with the Call on Faith smartphone app from Odyssey Networks. On the Day One channel, you can watch videos featuring Day One host Peter Wallace in a brand new series of meditations entitled, What is God Saying to You Today? Call on Faith brings you inspiring videos from a variety of faith groups with fresh videos each month. And you can easily download it to your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, Sprint phone, or Nook for a nominal charge. For more information, visit dayone.org and click on the link to Call on Faith.